Good evening, everyone. This is James Sagerton, Chair of the Pacifica National Finance Committee. This is the Pacifica National Finance Committee, or NFC's, meeting of June 27th, 2023. We believe we have quorum, and I'm going to ask the Secretary, R. Paul Martin, to take the role. R. Paul.
Okay, please answer up when you hear your name. Sharon Adams.
Here.
Teresa Allen. Elizabeth Von Gunten.
Here. Here.
Kamau Harris.
Here.
Julie Hewitt.
Here.
Jim Kaufman.
Here.
R. Paul Martin here. James McFadden. Sean Kelly McPherson.
I am, in fact.
James Sagerton.
Here.
Okay, that's seven. You have a quorum.
Very good. Thank you, R. Paul. Okay. We've convened the meeting. We're now going to go to the we did the roll call. We're going to adopt the agenda. I'll read the agenda. It's a brief one. Number one, convene meeting. Number two, roll call. Number three, adopt agenda. Number four, minutes for 5 minutes. Number five, recent issues with Great Plains, with Director of Engineering and Compliance, John Almella, 15 minutes. Six, report from the Executive Director, 30 minutes. Seven, adjourn no later than 10:15 p.m. Eastern Time. Are there any, is there any discussion?
May I propose an amendment
sure.
to include the chair's announcements, maybe as item number five?
There aren't any new announcements, Beth, so I was going to just skip that.
All right.
But thank you.
Never mind. Sure. Never mind.
Thank you for that. Any other discussion, additions, subtractions? Hearing none, is there any objection? Hearing none, the agenda is adopted. We will now go to number four, minutes. Paul?
I move that we approve the minutes of the June 13th, 2023 NFC meeting. They were sent out, was it yesterday? Something like yesterday. They've been sent out.
Very good. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, is there any objection?
Wait, I was on mute. I don't have them, but I'll just abstain.
That's fair. I appreciate that, Kim. I'm sure we can get them to you. Okay. Is there any objection to adopting those minutes? Hearing none, we'll consider them adopted with the always present proviso that they can be amended at any time in the future as required or as approved by the committee. Number five. Now that brings us to you, John. This is recent issues with Great Plains. We have here the Director of Engineering and Compliance, John Almella. This is a 15-minute item. I want to restrict this strictly to the issue of the recent issues with Great Plains. John was gracious enough to come on to the call with us to give us some further information about this, and he's not prepared, and I won't rule in order any questions outside of this specific area. So, John, I understand you prepared some remarks.
Yes. Hello, everyone.
Wonderful. Thank you very much for being here.
So, Microsoft Great Plains has been used as Pacifica's accounting software since before I was hired in 2006. KPFT's IT specialist, who worked for the station since 2003, was hired to handle the national servers, Great Plains, and other IT in 2015. In 2018, Pacifica's the server hardware for the Great Plains server and the National Office file server, which was running MS Server 2003, which resided at the National Office in Berkeley, was upgraded as those computers were very old and needed to be replaced. Pacifica could not afford the licenses for newer versions of Great Plains, which is now known as Microsoft Dynamics. Our existing version, Great Plains 2016, needs to run on Microsoft Server 2003. So for security reasons, Great Plains needed to be run in a Server 2003 environment, virtualized environment, under Server 2012, which made the upgrade complicated and more costly than if we had just been able to run it under Server 2012. So also in 2018, NIDA was contracted to provide financial oversight for Pacifica's business operations and audits. They were unfamiliar with Great Plains 2012 and used to Microsoft MAS 500. So our business managers would enter data in Great Plains 2016, and NEDA would import the data, would export the data and import it into MAS 500. In 2020, when the national offices were sold, the national servers were hosted GP were moved from Berkeley to KPFK's building. In May 2021, the KPFK national office IT person left Pacifica. We were without a national IT person until April 2022. In October 2021, a consultant was hired to restructure KPFK's network and bring down internet and phone system costs. The individual arrived at KPFK in January 2022 to reconfigure the services and the network. What he found was that nothing was labeled and it was very difficult to set things up. The national servers were not part of that project, but since the servers were housed at KPFK, we found ourselves with two commingled networks. In April 2022, the contractor decided he was through providing support for the KPFK network and phone system. In October 2022, KPFK's station staff made some changes to the network, which entangled KPFK and Pacifica Radio Archives Network, which interfered with communications with the national server and GP for about, I would say, it was about 10 or 11 days. I worked with the KPFK staff and volunteers and were able to detangle these two networks and also found that the Wi-Fi router was misconfigured and was also interfering with the national server. Finally, Fred Blair and Michael Novick were able to help me restore the network to allow the business managers to connect to Great Plains. We hired some Great Plains specialists who resolved some permissions issues, created additional user accounts, helped us create the affiliate program unit database, and helped us to resolve other database issues. Also, in October 2022, NIDA and Pacifica parted ways, and we left to our own financial devices. In January 2023, we lost connection to the server again when someone went into the terminal room at KPFK and disconnected the cable used for the national server from the main Ethernet switch so that they could plug something else in its place. We made a rule after that the network was not to be touched without authorization. In the last few months, the only problems with Great Plains have been resolved by rebooting processes or making configuration changes. The server hardware is now 7 years old, which means that it needs to be replaced. Our plan is to move the virtualization to a cloud server once we have the funds for this project and the monthly hosting fees. Any questions?
Or Paul?
I'm going to take a stack, but I want to ask John to do one more thing for us before we go to the stack. But I got you, our Paul, and then I'll ask others. John, I was wondering if you could elaborate somewhat on, and I know perhaps this is asking too much, but the reason I invited you here is because we were starting to get some questions about why don't we have monthly financials on a regular basis. And could you elaborate a little bit on how maybe in the last 6 months or so, the difficulties that we're having with Great Plains has impacted our business managers' abilities to utilize it and to generate the monthly statements on a regular basis?
Well,
if you know, I think you know something about it.
Yeah, sometimes if they can't get in, even though there's been less problems, they're still playing catch up, I think, from the times when there were problems. And I don't think that all the business managers have been trained. I think Mark, our interim person that's working as the CFO, is playing catch up and hasn't been able to interface with all the units that have not been trained yet in Great Plains. So I think that they're probably those issues earlier on have impacted where we are now.
But would you agree that it sounds like it does? It does. So it sounds like, just to summarize it, it seems like a combination of technical issues and human issues dealing with lack of training, lack of knowledge. Those two things coming together interfere with our abilities to generate these
and
reports.
Lack of extra staff.
Yes, and also sometimes when we have these difficulties with Great Plains, we don't have the expertise always to deal with them, and we need to go to outside sources. Is that right?
That's correct. In fact, last week there was an issue which one of the business managers called me up and said, I'm seeing something, sent me a text saying, what is this message? And I wrote an email to our contracted Great Plains specialist, and they actually sent me back within half an hour. They sent me back a Word document with the fix. So I called up all the business managers I could, so that they could apply the fix. And it was basically just hitting no to the error message and checking a box. And that fixed the issue. But these issues do crop up from time to time, possibly because, the server performed an update and something is a little bit out of whack. I don't know, because I don't really use Great Plains. So I don't really know it. But anyway.
One more question, John. One more ask I have of you, John, and that is, would you please reiterate one more time the solution that you have about the cloud and how to solve this problem? And you said, when we get the money for this, and could you tell us what the approximate cost as you now estimate it?
I don't know the cost. I think the cost will probably be, I can't give you a cost because I haven't gotten a quote yet, because we had some issues figuring out how this would happen, and we haven't gotten a quote yet. So I don't want to give a quote that would be wrong, especially on the stream. But we do have a contractor that works with KPFK, KPFT, and WPFW, providing internet services, telephone services, IT support, and they think that they can they can reconfigure it into the cloud, which means that it would be much easier, you know, if let's say the internet was down at KPFK, it wouldn't affect the national server. It would be on someone's server farm.
Would you be willing to venture a guess? Are we talking tens of thousands, twenties of thousands, hundreds of thousands? What ballpark are we in?
I don't know how much it's going to be for the initial configuration. Probably, I'm guessing not more than $1,000 if we can if they can get at the virtualizations and pull them out, pull the data out through them, because then all you have to do is relink the virtualization. So that's supposedly not that difficult. I don't know, maybe 6,000 to 1,000 a month for hosting.
Okay. I don't know is an honest answer, and
I'm
appreciate
sorry.
That.
600 to 1,000 a month.
Oh.
That sounds a lot better.
Yeah, no.
I appreciate that even more.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, John. I appreciate you, filling in some detail there. So I had our Paul. Are there others with questions?
McFadden to the stack.
Gotcha. Anyone else? Let's start with our Paul then. Go ahead, our Paul.
Okay, my first part was going to be what's just been answered, what it's going to cost. The other thing is, how optimistic are you that people will be able to be properly retrained on all of this to make it work out?
Properly retrained? It'll be the same Great Plains system. It'll look exactly the same. The only difference for them logging in would be possibly they may get new passwords. They'll use a new IP to connect to Great Plains. We have some contracted Great Plains specialists, which could probably train the people that have not used Great Plains yet. And I don't think that'll be that expensive, you know. I think that they're reasonable.
Okay. One final suggestion here.
Sure.
At your point where your Ethernet connections are, perhaps a big sign that tells anybody who goes in there that they need specific authorization to pull any plugs.
That's what Michael has told his staff that they are not to make any changes without
a big sign helps.
Myself. Yeah, that would probably be good. I can talk to him about that.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, our Paul McFadden.
Thanks for the report. Sorry I missed some of the beginning part. I'm not involved in the data side anymore, with big servers and mm-hmm. and lots of systems like this. And at least in the past, you know, the solution you have sounds like the best solution short term at the mm-hmm. lower cost probably, but will entail long term costs as we switch to the cloud. And the way we dealt with things like this in the past, which would have more upfront, is to just build a mirror server. And is that, you know, so if you build a mirror server at one of the other locations, not there, you build it, you know, at some other location, the chances of, since this kind of event happens so rarely, if it goes down, it's not a big deal. Everybody just switches to the mirror. In fact, often software is set up just to go there if the first one's down, because internet can be down for, you know, for lots of reasons.
That's a possibility. The problem there is then you run into synchronization issues. And I don't know how Great Plains is set up to deal with that type of thing.
Yeah, because I always thought those things just ran in background. So your mirror server is kind of always, you know, checking and, you know, tapping the other one and is, you know, and they're pretty up to date, you know, within minutes until till one goes down. And then it's the only issue is like bringing, you know, that one, everybody switches over to that. And then you, bringing the other one back up and synchronizing it, which is, you know, we had some kind of scripts that just ran and did that.
It's possible. I don't know if you heard the beginning, but, or the part of my statement, which says that we're running Great Plains 2016, which only runs on server 2003. So it would be a virtualization behind server 2012. And you know what? We're not talking about the latest versions. We're talking about something from basically 12, 13 years ago. So I don't know if it's set up for that type of synchronization, and it can be a problem because you have to, you know, have to make decisions which database is the most current, you know. And I don't know if it can go in, and if let's say one person's in one instance and one person's in another instance, you could have some issues. And I really don't know Great Plains well enough to or databases, current databases well enough to tell if we would lose data and how we would synchronize it.
Okay, so compatibility issues, you know, because we're using really old stuff.
Right.
Okay, I'm going to think about that.
Which we can't afford. If we could afford, you know, a later version of Microsoft, that would be great and upgrade. But at this point, you know, the licenses are way more expensive than we can afford at present.
Okay. All right. I'll let somebody else ask a question.
Thank you, McFadden. Is there anyone else who has a question?
If nobody else does, I have one one. Oh, let somebody else go.
We'll come back to our fault. Go ahead, Beth.
Thank you. Hang on just a second. First, I want to say I'm from an emergency management perspective. I like McFadden's solution of owning our own redundancy in the form of our own mirror servers. And I recognize there would be a need to resolve the, you know, all the compatibility and software questions that were mentioned. But I think that would be less precarious for us in major emergencies. The questions I had, some of which are kind of along the same lines, how confident are we in the robustness of this current tech fix that got us back up and running? And related to that, I'll just put all the questions out there first and then you can address them as you will. Related to that is, do you see any glaring ongoing points of vulnerability, and if so, what? And what do you anticipate the next needed upgrade will need to chase?
Well, we'll probably have a higher server than 2012. We'll be using something more current, but I don't think there's that much vulnerability. We also, if we move it to the cloud, then we could have backups that are local. We could have several stations back everything up. So I don't think that'll be a problem. I think, you know, the cloud solution is probably the best solution, but it does have ongoing costs.
Thank you.
Thank you, Joan. Are you done, Beth?
Yeah, for the moment, thanks.
Paul, let me ask if there's anybody else who hasn't had a question yet. Hearing no one, go ahead, Paul.
Okay. Regarding backups, so when it goes to the cloud, we'll have a nice backup, and maybe at the local stations. And currently, what is our backup status? Do we have backups, and are they regularly tested?
I'd have to check with our national IT person, to see if he's been able to back up the server recently. I think he probably has. Testing backups, you kind of need a computer that's set up, similar to the one that you're actually using for the server to be able to test it. So I don't know about that. I could check and get back to Jim about that.
Okay. A fast bit of stuff that's happened in the past. Some years ago, we discovered that everything crashed at the national office. And so they said, don't worry, we have a backup. And they went, and the backup was completely corrupted. And Pacifica spent months and months with trying to get people to dig out old paper statements and things to, key it all back in. And so it was really quite a mess. So, yeah, backups are a really good idea. All right. Thank you.
Did you want to respond, John?
I agree. Backups are a really good idea. Unfortunately, we were kind of left in the lurch for about a year and a half after we lost our national person.
Right.
And so during that time period, even though the servers kind of continued to work, and supposedly we had a service that was doing backups, but I'm not sure if they're still doing backups for us. So I will check to see if we're doing local backups and get back to you.
Appreciate that.
Okay. Anything else?
Yeah, I want to ask if there are any other questions. If there are, I'm going to ask for an extension of time. If there aren't, we can let you go, John. Is there anybody else with any other questions? John, before we let you go, let me just ask Stephanie if this pretty much comports with her understanding, and is there any questions she has, she might have?
No, I'm thankful for John and his expertise, and we do talk on a regular basis, and he does let me know when there are issues and when things are fixed, and he really is quite an asset to the company because everybody's aware of a lot of the concerns with Great Plains, and as soon as something happens, there's a whole slew of people that start working immediately to try to get it fixed. So
yep.
He explains it very well in layman's terms for me to understand.
And Stephanie, does it comport with, my understanding of the issues we've been having with getting the financials? This is a major, if not the main cause of it. Is that right?
Oh, very much so. Yeah, and a lot of that is the catch-up because, once you can't start putting in information for this month if you don't have it from the month before, and, everything is dependent upon everything else. So we can't even have a complete set of financials if we're not getting what we need from each of the divisions in a timely manner. And then if that doesn't reconcile with any of the, bank statements, then we've got to go back and make those changes as well. So there has been a learning curve just in general from, a new person in that position. And then not only having that learning curve, but then trying to play catch up and then not having complete financials from NETA. They were doing a great job, but didn't always, a lot of the bank reconciliations didn't quite match, or the reports that they had didn't quite match with how we would input them into Great Plains. So yeah, there was a lot of catch-up going on. Netta did a great job. I'm not saying that they didn't do that, but there was a large learning curve and a lot of playing catch-up.
Yes, that's my understanding as well. Thank you, Stephanie. I'll give it one more chance. Any other questions for John Amella, our director of engineering? Go ahead, Deb.
And Julie.
Good.
I can let Julie go first. I've spoken already.
Julie?
Go ahead. I just wanted to, express my appreciation to John Almella for, this really was clear and concise and really helpful. So thanks, John, for taking time out of your evening to come talk to us.
Of course.
Thank you, Julie. Beth?
Julie just took the words right out of my mouth. So thank you, John, for taking time to talk to us. Really appreciate it. Sure.
Well, let me add my thanks, John. We promised to get you out of here quickly, and we did. So you can go on about your business and save Pacifica.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, John, very much. Appreciate your presence here. Okay. Very good. That's John Almella, our Director of Engineering and Compliance. He does a lot of work in the background that nobody sees, but he's a very busy and very helpful person to Pacifica. Okay, that brings us to item number 6. Stephanie, this is your turn. This is a report from the Executive Director. We have 30 minutes scheduled. As always, you can take as little or as much of that as you want, and we can, of course, extend, which we frequently do during the question period. The floor is yours, Stephanie. Go ahead.
Thank you. The consolidated financials for each of the divisions and a total of everything for period ending April 30th, 2023 was sent to everyone today. We just got those yesterday. They were also sent out to all the general managers, the division managers, and those units that have business managers as well. And as always, they have we invite them, of course, to take a look at them, review them, and then meet with Markeisha and myself if they have any questions or concerns. And we do have emails coming in already from some of the general managers that want to go over the financials with us prior to when we would normally meet with them on that. So it's a very helpful process for them to be able to see what's going on and also for each of the divisions to kind of take an overall look at how the other units are doing as well. So we don't really have, everybody just got those, so I'm assuming that we will be able to spend more time taking a look at them at the next meeting so people could have more time to be able to ask their questions that they have on those. And there may be, if there are any changes that we have after meeting with the general managers, the business managers, we'll make sure to send out a revised version prior to the next meeting. We haven't heard anything yet from CPB, so I'm checking my emails with that. But in the meantime, I've been compiling, based upon the information that we needed for that grant, just compiling a development materials library, which is kind of a basic thing that most foundations have where you have just generic everything in one file. That's an updated list of board of directors, updated list in our case of, staff members, the bylaws, the tax papers, everything kind of in one file, things that can be cut and paste. If someone in another division is writing a grant, they can just go somewhere and just pull a brief history, those kind of things. So as I said one time before, this putting together the CPB grant was able to allow me to create a nice list of things that we have, things that we don't have, and things that we need to continue to update on a regular basis. We are rolling out, with John's help as well, the sexual harassment prevention training at KPFK. We'll be just sent a list out for the general manager there to review to make sure that we have the correct list of all the staff members that need to take that training, and we're doing the same thing with KPFA. So that just went out late this afternoon. And I don't think I have anything else financially to discuss, but if anybody has any questions, I'm sure you will bring something up that I might have forgotten about.
Thank you, Stephanie. Okay, any questions?
R. Paul.
We'll take a stack. R. Paul, anyone else?
Back to the stack.
Paul, anyone else? Let's start with R. Paul.
Okay. What's the status of the audit at this time?
We are ready to begin the audit, but we just don't have the finances to begin the audit. So we have everything in line of what we need to do. We still continue to keep in touch with the auditing firm that we have, but we just don't have the finances at this point to begin that process.
So a follow-up would be, isn't June 30th like a serious deadline, or can we get an extension on that?
I've already submitted an extension, knowing that we probably wouldn't have the finances for it. I submitted an extension with the state a couple of months ago, and that was granted.
Okay, so that goes to what, October?
Yes.
Okay, and will the CPB raise an eyebrow or be bothered by the fact that we didn't make one by June 30th?
No, we've extended our audits in the past, and the audit that they were looking for when we submitted the application was for the most recent audited financial statement, and there are quite a few, you know, it was easy to explain away that we, you know, didn't have the funding at this time to do our audit, but we hadn't been granted an extension, but I had let them know that we had applied for an extension. So they received the last 2 years of the audited financial statements and our 990 tax forms.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Beth, go ahead.
Thank you, Stephanie. First, thank you for these most recent financials. As you anticipated, I haven't had a chance to go over them yet, but I'm glad to have them in hand. I was wondering if you could, I've got a few questions, and just starting with the first simplest one. Can you tell us what the age payable figure is these days?
It's approximately $2.3 million, not counting central services.
Okay. Thank you. I'm making notes. And so this is, I guess, somewhat related to some of what we've talked about so far today, but it's standard business practice for organizations to report financials at regular, usually monthly intervals, kind of the minimum basic oversight, minimum that's necessary for oversight and due diligence, as Pacifica has done in the not-so-distant past, though that regularity has been disrupted by our loss of NEDA and the subsequent problems with Great Plains. But we've been on our own without NEDA now for close to 10 months, and the Great Plains problems sound like they're resolved at this point. And at least if everything we need to do for the audit is ready and we're just waiting to identify funding, then I'm hoping that it's not unrealistic to expect that we might return to more regular financial reporting, so that we could anticipate regular financials, say at this interval each month, so that we could count on being able to review the financials at the second NFC meeting of the month, before the end of the month, with Pacifica in such dire financial straits. It's more urgent than ever that that we need that basic metrics. Without that, the governance and the directors aren't in a position to do our basic due diligence. Is it possible to arrange for that? Can we look forward to, you know, from this point on, to getting financials on a regular monthly basis?
Yes, I'm sure that we will, as we get caught up with things and more information comes in from the units and the divisions, to get everything plugged in to Great Plains in a timely manner.
So then the next NFC meeting at the end of July would be on July 25th. And I would hope that we would be able to anticipate having financials to review at that point. And then on a, on another topic, I'm wondering, I don't know that you'll have this figure off the top of your head, but maybe in time for the next meeting. I'm wondering, how much have we managed to reduce payroll overall throughout the whole network within your time, and maybe even farther back than that? We've been cutting, at least since I came on to the P&B, and I think before that. And I'm wondering how much, what is the total of that downsizing financially, and how much more may still be in the pipeline as we continue to pay down accrued benefits of those whose positions have been reduced. And I'm not expecting you to have that figure off the top of your head, but anything you can say about it now, I've just been giving it a lot of thought lately. Thank you.
I can pull up in the EV reports that are given to the PNB when the meeting is near one of the payrolls. I put in that the payrolls, the payroll for each of the divisions and what that total cost is. So I can, so that could be viewed by just comparing the ED reports. I can pull up the, my computer now, various, the spreadsheets that I use to run that and then try to get a number for you.
This is Kim. I have that number. I'm looking at the consolidated right now. I can give you that number,
Kim.
April to April, if you'd
Kim.
Like.
Kim, I appreciate the information, but could you ask to be recognized? And you kind of interrupted Stephanie there. Stephanie, were you done with what you wanted to say?
Yeah, because I'm just pulling up a file. I mean, I was pulling up a file per by station, but yeah, it is Kim's correct in that it is listed on the financials. If you compare the consolidated financials that were just put out, and you compare the expenses from here and last year, so since she has it right in front of her, by all means, she's more than welcome to share those numbers.
Kim, do you want to add?
Yeah, for the consolidated, the payroll, the personnel cost is $333,001 less than the previous April. And, you know, you can go through station by station. KPFK's, as I was looking at earlier, was about maybe 150, something like that, less than the year before, but these are all in the consolidated, 685 to 530. So yeah, about 150 at K less this year than the previous year.
Good. Thank you, Kim. Are there any other questions for Stephanie?
Come out
of Sharon.
Chat. Okay. I heard come out first and then Sharon.
Thank you. Stephanie, does Pacifica produce a consolidated balance sheet? And if so, why do we not review that document as well? And if not, why not?
We definitely need to, and a lot of that is just working with the business manager to make a better list as to what it is that we need once we can have all this information and get caught up. Because I know with April, I would rather be, as would Markeisha, we'd rather be looking at the May financials right now rather than the April financials. So it's just a matter of getting caught up, getting more comfortable with the whole system, and then being able to create that updated aged payables, cash on hand, those kind of things. So we're working on it.
Is that consolidated balance sheet, has it been prepared for the prior year for the audit already? So you have one that you're anticipating being audited at this point?
I would have to ask Markeisha on that.
Okay. If it's available, I'd like to, if we could, review it, if the chair would allow. Thank you.
Of course.
Is that all, Kamau?
Yes, that's it.
Thank you. Sharon?
Okay, yes, thank you. So, hi, Stephanie. Just following up on some of the stuff that you talked about the last time that I heard you speaking, I wanted to ask about two things. I wanted to ask about the KPFK sale and what's going on with that. And then the second question is, I was curious about the status of the interest payments on the FJC loan.
We have not made any payments on the interest payments for the FJC loan, meaning we didn't pay the March payment. There'll be another payment due in 3 days. We do not have the funding for that. We are keeping them informed of the status every time that we get closer or any, you know, type of offer comes through with the building. We're also behind on the payments for the EIDL loan that we received as well. Those payments are a little over $8,000 per month, and we owe 3 months at this point. The KPFK building sale, we have two offers on the table. Another one is coming through tomorrow, and then we should be having another one within the next few days. So then we'll have four separate offers to select from.
Wow, that's fantastic news on the building sale. That's great to have multiple offers. So because I remember the last time, you were only, there was two offers, I believe, the last time you reported. So that's good to hear.
It was kind of slow for a while, and then all of a sudden it just picked up.
Yes. Okay, and thank you. And then the last question I have is, just because I was looking at my notes from the last meeting, well, the last time that I heard you speaking, and the aged payables, if I have this right from the last time, were $1,970,000 approximately. And so from what you had just said today earlier, they're now $2.3 million, not counting central services. So, I mean, I guess I'll just make a comment on that. Seems like, I know what I wanted to ask. Yes. Could you give a breakdown of perhaps what is the highest, what are the largest amounts of the aged payables? If you can share that, I don't know if you can.
Well, they vary. We have some pretty substantial, well, first of all, we have very substantial interest payments that are due on the loans. We have some large payables to some of our vendors that are multiple years old that range anywhere from $68,000 to $97,000, just between two vendors that I can think of off the top of my head. We also have legal bills as well that are occurring, that are incurring, and that's not counting any, we don't count in any of the aged payables, actually any of Arthur's, our own personal counsel. His bills are not in any of our aged payables, actually, because a lot of people have often said, you know, that we're selling buildings to pay his bills or things like that, but his bills are not even counted in those aged payables. And unfortunately, almost every week, there's some new bill that pops up that may be small, but they, you know, can range anywhere sometimes from $3,000 up to maybe $10,000 or $11,000 of just some bill that maybe has been fallen through the cracks, or maybe stations have been, you know, a little scared to bring them forward knowing that they're past due. But we've been working quite diligently for the last couple of weeks, just trying to make a lot of payment arrangements with individuals and then letting some of those larger bills with people know that we are in the process of trying to sell the building and that we are working at this point to start prioritizing a lot of those aged payables from that, from the sale of that building.
Okay. Thank you very much. That's all I have.
Thank you, Sharon. Anyone else?
I have one more, but I can, if there are others, I can wait.
Let's see if anybody has had one yet.
This is Kim.
Okay. Anybody else? I hear a noise, but not a voice. Is there anyone else with a question for Stephanie who hasn't spoken yet? Kim, you have spoken, but less than Beth, so why don't you go ahead?
Well, I guess I want to give my help about these balance sheets. For the last, not maybe 8 years, because we got so behind in order to catch up, we've always waited for the audit and for the auditor to produce the balance sheet. So balance sheet comes kind of after the auditor has gone through everything to clean up whatever he needs to clean up. So, you know, my understanding of the process is we don't make a balance sheet before the auditor, you know, like does his work, and that's part of the end process of the audit. And other than, you know, payables, I mean, the last balance sheet is on the last audit. That's as close as we have. That's the most current balance sheet we have. So that's it. I mean, I don't really understand. Canal probably does more than me, but I don't know if that helps him.
Canal, do you want to respond?
You know.
No, that's helpful. It sort of makes sense, and you know, I guess, you know, we don't really do a lot of reconciling in the interim, so it does put a lot of pressure and burden on the audit. I don't know if that even increases the cost of the audit potentially, but it's good to know. Thank you.
And Beth, if you don't mind, I'm going to interpose a question here too, and. I'm not going to say from where, but I have heard some concern about how prepared we are to go into the audit, and especially if we're going to be, you know, we've already filed for an extension. You know, we're going to be up against it and having to act quickly. How prepared are we, Stephanie, to move forward? I mean, if we had the resources today to go ahead with the audit, how much of the background work have we done? You know, Let me rephrase that. You know, on a scale of 1 to 10, how ready are we to jump into the audit? With 1 being not at all and 10 being here we go.
8.5 to 9.
Oh, good. That's great. Good. Okay, now I apologize, Beth. You go ahead. It's your turn.
Thank you. Am I unmuted? Yes, I am. Okay.
Yes,
Stephanie, I'm wondering whether if you can say anything about our prospects for how to cover the cost of the audit. I know you've been able to track down very specific donor money to cover other legal necessities for Pacifica, and I'm wondering if there's anything out there like that. I would be really amazed if there were grants available for this kind of thing. But otherwise, I mean, I watched as we caught up with several past due audits when I first came on to the Finance Committee, and I'm just loath to let us slip back to where we were before. So have you given any thought to what we can do to cut, and what exactly is that cost? I understand it's something less than $40,000, but, you know, I've heard that word of mouth. Thanks.
We are not going to slip back where we were. So there isn't going to, there is no chance that we will not be doing our audit. So I wouldn't even have a concern about that. The total cost is roughly about $78,000 to get the audit completed, and we need to, you know, have half of that prior to us starting. And well, I'm sorry, I didn't write down your other question.
Just do you have any
Oh, that's right. Grant. I have talked to some people regarding covering that cost. And the thing that's kind of ironic is that, you know, you're getting your audits done to sort of talk about your financial stability and your future, but yet you don't have the money to get your audit done. So
exactly.
Not the best return on investment for some of the, for some potential donors. They would hope that in order for us to report on how well we're doing financially, we would have the money to be able to get that completed.
Right. As a potential donor, I would expect to look at the audit rather than to fund the audit myself.
Of course. Yeah. And the audits are something that is required on the majority of grants that we ask, you know, that we apply for. And even on any sort of reporting with any grants after funding is received, they want the audited financial statements and the 990s.
Right.
And they're all on our website, which is, you know, extremely helpful for us to be able to just say they're public, they're out in the open, you know, here's the link, anyone can go see them.
Right. Thank you.
Is there anyone else with questions? I have some questions for Stephanie, but I will defer to anyone else who hasn't spoken or even who has. Not hearing anyone for the moment, I'll ask a few questions. Stephanie, we spoke earlier about consolidating the bank accounts. Do you want to say anything about that tonight?
Yes, we have been discussing for quite a few months now, looking at a lot of the services that we have across all of our divisions and trying to consolidate everything with one contract, one vendor. We have multiple contracts with the same vendors providing the same services, and it's costing us more money than we should be spending. Even something as simple as the e-blasts that are often sent out at each of the stations through Constant Contact or MailChimp, each of those is an individual account. So we're paying five separate bills for relatively the same service. Whereas we could consolidate all of that in one account and save money, but, you know, and with any of the e-blasts, you can create separate mailing lists so we wouldn't have this crossover. You know, WBAI can send out what they need to send out, KPFA can send out what they need to send out, you know, that kind of thing. So we're taking a close look with a lot of our services, from the phone centers to copy machines to printers to office supplies, whatever it may be, that we have one account, even as simple as shipping and FedEx, that we have, again, one account, not seven separate accounts that would include the affiliates and the archives if they're servicing or using something like that. But one of the things that we want to do, even just to make our financials more transparent and take away some of the burden that some of the stations are feeling in dealing with their own finances, we wouldn't be pulling everything from them, but just assisting them on a greater level, is moving all of the bank accounts into one central bank. We have four accounts right now with Bank of America. We've had multiple conversations with them to be able to discuss the savings that we would have in consolidating all of our bank accounts to go into Bank of America. And what we would be able to do is, of course, all of the stations and the business managers would still be, you know, they would still have access to the account with, you know, viewing and being able to make deposits on a regular basis, that kind of thing. But what we would do is, again, just be able to have a consolidated one bank, everything there. Markeisha and I would be able to see everything on a regular basis. We would be able to, like right now, for example, when we need to transfer money from one bank to the national office to cover payroll, for example, the money has to be wired. It can be very expensive. but this way we could literally just kind of, you know, transfer it from one account to another. We could also have one basic merchant fee for credit card payments, as each of the units, you know, accepts credit cards. We're paying merchant fees at each of those locations rather than just having one basic merchant fee for the credit card payments that we accept. We would also then reopen up a brokerage account since we're not at Charles Schwab any longer. So we're starting those conversations as well in order to have a brokerage account. And that I think we're going to open up even prior. So we've met with Bank of America and quite a few individuals there to discuss and get all the paperwork that is necessary to start that process. I've mentioned it to the general manager briefly. We haven't had any pushback. Their biggest concern was whether we would, you know, the business managers would still have a job. And, you know, those stations that do have business managers, of course, we would still keep them because we would, you know, there's still checks and things and payments and bills that all need to be, you know, looked at and budgeted and all those kind of things. So that wouldn't be an issue. And then what we would do also would be to implement a check request process. So rather than just the units just kind of paying bills and juggling what can be paid or not be paid, we would, Markeisha and I would be able to work with them to take away some of that burden. So when there is something that would need to be paid, we would follow, like many foundations do, a check request process where, you know, they would fill out their check request form. It would be attached with the invoice. That would be, you know, on the form, what account it will be pulled from, what it would be, what line item and account it would be charged against. And then that would be signed, would be attached, and then those checks or those payments would be issued then a few days later. So we could set up a system that everybody knew that, you know, for example, on Thursdays, they're sending in their check requests with the materials that back that up. And then those payments, after they're approved, would then be processed that following week. So then we were able to have a better check and balance and keep better records of money in and money out. So our goal is to try to have this accomplished prior to the start of the new fiscal year. We have already, again, started quite a few months ago conversations with Bank of America, and we're getting all of that that paperwork in process. One of the things we were concerned about as well is that since we do change board members on a regular basis, some banks have been very hesitant to continually change the signers that are on those accounts. And so we did meet with some individuals at Bank of America that would, they understand the our process in changing over the leadership roles and what would be our signers in our board of directors. And so by being able to look at our bylaws and understand that's how, you know, how we function, they wouldn't have a problem with changing those signers on a regular basis and would try to do something so they wouldn't always necessarily have to be wet signatures, which can be a lengthy process to get those done, but to be able to do something through, you know, DocuSign or some sort of secured signing ability so we can kind of keep that up on a regular basis, that when new board members come in that would have that signing power, that part of their training packet or, you know, their orientation when they come in as a new board member would just be to start that process with the banks. So we're hoping that the National Finance Committee will support that move and we would be able to put everything in place prior to the start of this upcoming fiscal year.